Hey everyone, and welcome to Unconventional Wellness Radio, a powerful and inspiring podcast set to revolutionize and disrupt healthcare. It's time to put you in the driver's seat and be the force of change necessary for the lifestyle you've always wanted. Hey guys, I'm so excited to bring you part two of my conversation with Dr. Edwin McDonald of the University of Chicago. You can check out Dr. McDonald on thedocskitchen.com as well. So enjoy the rest of my conversation today with Dr. McDonald.
Like I hate to say, everyone wants to talk about willpower and self-control. Like I feel like these concepts are unfair to some degree because it's hard out here. And there's certain environments where it's actually harder. So, you know, imagine being an alcoholic and your neighborhood is just bar after bar after bar after bar after bar. That's not a good environment for you to be in. You know, regardless of how much willpower you have, for the average person, that is just, it's a setup, for a struggle. And not many people get through that struggle. And that's what our neighborhoods are like. And another thing that really got me interested in nutrition, so I'm a Chicagoan. Like, I know these neighborhoods. I'm from these neighborhoods. I live in these neighborhoods. And, you know, what I have seen over the past 20 years, the rise of dialysis centers in urban neighborhoods, specifically here in Chicago.
Wow.
So, you know, when I look at a church, I'll see a church with a dialysis center next to it, with like a Popeye's chicken next to the dialysis center.
Wow.
And, you know, me just, you know, looking at that, the image of like there's a dialysis center, there's a church, and there's a fried chicken place. Like, what about this makes sense? You know what I mean? Like, this makes no sense whatsoever. And for me, you know, originally, I wasn't really interested in nutrition overall. Like, originally, I wanted to be a basic scientist. So, you know, I did research in the lab. I was, you know, killing mice and trying to figure out how to, you know, create medications for inflammatory bowel disease and stuff like that. But then when I started thinking about these images, that just doesn't make sense. I'm like, man, I will have a greater impact on people if I just talked about food than, you know, me being in the lab and, you know, and killing mice, unfortunately. Because, you know, I knew I was never going to be the guy that's going to cure colon cancer. Like, that's just not me. That is not my skill set. And I'm okay with admitting that. But, you know, I could be the guy that tells people, you know, to eat less french fries.
And gotcha.
There's something powerful in getting people to eat less french fries.
Yeah.
It may even be more powerful than curing colon cancer. You know what I mean?
And that's the thing, too, is that, like, you know, I want to get into the next topic that I'd love to talk to you about, of course, with your conception of what you call the doc's kitchen. But it's almost like we could look at what's also kind of happening is that in America, we're allowing others to cook for us these days.
Definitely.
Growing up, I mean, I'm Italian, and the heart of the home for most Americans was the kitchen. I mean, that's where conversations happen. That's where, like, my mentors in my family gave me world life knowledge. That's where we sat around and just, you know, made pasta at that time and made these different types of foods that it would just create conversations. And, and so, unfortunately, we have definitely moved away from the kitchen being the center of our home. And now people who are even listening to this call may have absolutely no understanding of how to make food. And so, you know, what is being delivered to them in these restaurants might be their only opportunity. And so I think that fuels this, you know, the whole food swamp idea is that even where I'm at, I'm in a little bit more of a rural area. But yet I can drive 10 minutes and there is literally fast food alley in one of the cities that's, or I should say one of the towns that's close to me. So, I really urge our listeners to try to just take charge, say to yourself, I don't want to do this anymore and I need to get back into the kitchen and I need to learn how to make food. We'll talk a little bit more about like regional local food and how you can help support that as well. But let's really dive into, let's get our meat hooked into this whole concept of the Doc's Kitchen. how long now has it been, like, if you want to just kind of tell us about, like, you know, this spurring along that you needed to tell people about food, and then how did you finally just put your foot through the door, if you will, and how was Doc's Kitchen created?
Yeah, so, you know, I realized that looking through on the internet for websites about nutrition, I felt, one, there was too much information out there, and information was all over the place. A lot of information, one, you know, there were a few doctors who were actually writing about nutrition. So it was hard for me to find any role models in terms of, like, actual physicians who are communicating about nutrition. I mean, there's definitely people out there, don't get me wrong, but it's just not a lot of us. And then I, you know, saw a plethora of, you know, self-proclaimed nutritionists, and a plethora of people that were, they were putting out, you know, there's some good information, there was some not so good information in terms of what people should eat. And I felt like in order to combat that, I need to create my own platform. So at first I was intimidated. I didn't know anything about starting a website. I didn't know anything about, you know, writing blog articles. This was, you know, uncharted territory for me. And, you know, I'm a guy, like, I was a biology major. I went to medical school. Getting on websites and whatnot, this is not what I did.
Mm-hmm. Not your skill set.
Not my skill set. And even writing and talking about it, it's just, you know, not my skill set, not my personality.
Sure.
So for many years, you know, after I went to culinary school, I just didn't know what to do. Like, I had this training. I felt like I had the information, and I didn't know how to get out there. And I was asking friends who knew websites to help, you know, get me started. But then everyone's just like, oh, it's so easy. Just go on WordPress. Or, you know, some people just want to charge, you know, give me, you know, $3,000 and I'll make it. And I'm like, no, I don't have $3,000. So, you know, one day I just sat down and, you know, just made it. Like, I got on WordPress and, you know, I would message the WordPress people to help people, and they would give me, you know, certain tips. And, you know, a month or two later, there was a website. So I started a website, and I had no idea what I should put on the website. You know, there's plenty of food blogs out there. So, like, why would I just make a food blog when there's already, you know, thousands of food blogs, great chefs, and, you know, people making good recipes?
Sure.
So, you know, initially I started just focusing on recipes, but then I just thought about it, and I'm like, I'm not a good food photographer, so not learn food photography. So, you know, as I was building my skills as a food photographer, I'm like, well, I'm just going to write about nutrition. So I'll write an article about, you know, questions my patients ask me in clinic. You know, well, like, is coconut oil healthy, or is, you know, should I drink kombucha? Or, you know, is it okay for diabetics to eat fruit? So I would, research the literature. And, you know, answer those questions with an evidence-based, not only evidence-based, but also experience-based. So then I started to realize, I'm like, you know, all these questions, I have experience in the clinic, story, personal experience, family experience, and then I have the evidence. And I'm like, okay, well, let's put it all together, and it makes for, you know, not only an entertaining blog post, but educational blog post.
Absolutely.
And then when I started thinking about recipes, I thought about all these blogs, you know, these food blogs, where they have these great recipes, but no one really explains why, you know, food is a good recipe. So I'm like, okay, well, maybe if I give recipes, let me give citations and references as to why I put together this recipe. So now it becomes evidence-based eating as opposed to just a recipe.
Ooh,
so,
nice. Yeah.
You know, people learn something, you know, learn how to cook. But then also people learn the science behind some of this stuff. And I started doing it maybe about a year ago. And, you know, it's still in its infancy. But, you know, people seem to like it. I get a decent amount of views, and it's growing. And you know, I'm working on trying to figure out some of this Google SEO search engine optimization stuff. So, you know, when people search certain terms, my website will pop up. And it is a work in progress, but I'm committed to it. and I'm trying to figure out ways to get better at it. So, you know, the website is www.thedockskitchen.com. But what I found is that I use it as a resource in clinic. So a lot of times in my weight management clinic, I also have a weight management clinic, I'll sit down and I'll start talking to people, and people say things like, oh, you know, I'm addicted to potato chips. And I'm like, oh, you know what? I wrote an article about potato chip addiction and some of the science behind it. As a matter of fact, let's pull up my article. And in our clinic visit, I go through the article, and, you know, that it's a example. It's just like bringing up a PowerPoint and stuff. We're in a clinic visit. So people really appreciate it. And then a lot of my patients end up following the website and end up commenting on some of the articles and asking questions, which for me, you know, it's just a good example of how the internet can change a clinic visit and, you know, the way we deliver care. And I'm still trying to figure out, like, how to use this as a resource, because it's just not a lot of examples. I mean, I just don't have any other physician I can go to, like, oh, man, so what do you do with your website and your clinic visit? So in many ways, I'm just kind of on my own and trying to figure out how to use this as a resource. And that's one of the reasons why I like that Healthy Practice Conference, because it got me in contact with, you know, some of the few individuals in the country who are doing some of this stuff. So there was the one doctor who has a Yum project, and she was talking about how she used her website in a clinic visit. And I'm like, oh, this is amazing. This is exactly what I'm trying to do. And, you know, another issue with the website, that's how they found me for the conference. Someone just randomly was on the internet, and they came across the website, and they were like, oh, this website looks good. We should have this guy speak at the conference.
Well, for the benefit of everybody that was at the conference, I'm glad that somebody Google searched you, because you definitely have a great story, and we're so grateful to, you know, be able to listen to your story, because it's inspiring that there are, you know, medical providers, you know, medical doctors and doctor of osteopathic medicine and things like that, like people that we go and we see, you know, and it's just inspiring to see that people are finally starting to get hip to this. And the downside is that access to medical care, you know, that is another barrier in our country, and it's very difficult for a lot of Americans to be able to see medical providers at all. And so it's great to see folks like yourself putting out this information, saying, like, you know, like, yes, we're still here because you still need these tests, you still need these labs, but when it comes to nutrition, you can make a choice. And you absolutely can get started with something. And I love the fact that you also, I've seen on your blog that you also talk about ways to cook food. You know,
yeah.
Like that's something that a lot of people, once again, have a problem with. And so there are, you know, what we in the military we call the field expedient ways to still create very nutritious meals in very short periods of time.
Yeah.
You know, it requires a little bit more of an input. Like, you know, like one of the things I remember doing when I was younger was I'd make all my protein for the week, you know, so
right.
I would do something like that. But now we got like instant pots, and, you know, we can create I can cook a chicken in, I think, like 20 minutes,
yeah.
You know, a whole chicken. So,
and make
it's
it
inspiring
delicious.
To see that. It's inspiring to absolutely see that you're actually doing this work. And so, I wanted to, like, if we could, can we dig a little bit into, this understanding of where, you know, preventable disease, like what I talked about earlier with the whole 80% of Americans can do that. What can we say to other physicians that might be listening to this podcast about inspiring them to also maybe consider doing the same? Because all over the country, the data is showing it. You know, the American College of Preventive Medicine is showing a lot of really great data and research into backing the importance of nutrition and considerations for exercise or functional movement in their clinics. What can we say to those physicians out there who might be listening to this podcast? Like, what can they do? What are some of these steps that they can take that you've already shown your intrepid endeavors, if you will?
Yeah. So the first step is really recognizing the severity of the problem. And that really entails getting into some of the nutritional literature and understanding epidemiology of some of these diseases,
mm-hmm.
the prevalence of some of these diseases. And a lot of that public health stuff isn't really taught well in medical school. You know, in medical school, we learn physiology, we learn pathophysiology, anatomy. It's a lot of science, but it's not necessarily public health focused. And, you know, sometimes it is, but most of the times it's not. So physicians really have to gain a true appreciation for the scope of the problem. So just a couple of facts. According to the CDC, 650,000 people die every year from diet-related diseases. That's a lot. And that number should not be ignored. Also in terms of data from NHANES, one of our biggest kind of, you know, survey cohort studies, they found that for the average American, 60% of our calories come from ultra-processed foods. So
wow.
Ultra-processed foods are like, I mean, they're like the superhero of processed foods. You know, we talk about processed foods. I'm talking about ultra-processed foods. It's the next step up. And 60% of our calories are ultra-processed. And ultra-processed foods aren't even real foods. You know, they really contain industrial ingredients that you can't find at a supermarket or in your kitchen cabinet or your cupboard. But that's where all our calories are coming from. And that has a huge impact on our overall health and the health of the country. So as a physician, we have to recognize that problem. And the contribution of, the way we're eating to our, you know, health outcomes. So that's the first step. The second step is now figuring out, you know, what to do about it and how to get some training. So for me, some of that training did not happen in medical school. And, you know, I'm not saying every physician needs to go out and go to culinary school. I was lucky to have the opportunity, but you don't have to do that. So there are simple things that you can do. One, Cornell has a good plant-based program where you can get a certificate in plant-based nutrition online just by going through Cornell. And Cornell is a legitimate university.
Absolutely.
And I think that program, I mean, it's not free. I don't remember exactly how much it cost, but I think it was like $1,000 or so. But, you know, for a physician, being willing to spend $1,000 to actually help your patients out, I think that is a small price to pay for the benefit that you may be able to give to others. And then there's also a course, there's an online cooking school called Ruby. And Ruby, R-O-U-X-B-E, so roux like a gumbo roux, and they have a good course in plant-based cooking, certificate program in plant-based cooking, which I also took. So even though I went to culinary school, I took a separate online course specifically focused on just cooking vegetables because, you know, my top 10 cook culinary school, they didn't really teach us how to make tofu and, you know, tempeh and all this, you know, vegan dishes and whatnot. That's just, you know, they teach, you know, French culinary basic techniques. So I had to seek more education in order to get good at some of that stuff and even learn about it. So those resources are easy and available. You can do it in the comfort of your own home. And then you know, there's plenty of organizations where you can learn more about how to actually talk to patients about food. So if you're interested in helping people with weight issues, you can join the Obesity Society and go to Obesity Week. As a matter of fact, Obesity Week is coming up in Nashville, I think second week of November.
Okay.
So great resources for folks who want to get certified in obesity medicine. And then there's a lot of resources, the Plantrition Project. Scott Stoll, a plant-based physician has a website called, I think Plantrition.org. And they have a lot of conferences. So they have a plant-based nutrition conference that happens, in San Diego every year in September. Great resource. And, you know, a lot of physicians go there, but a lot of non-physicians go there. So it's a lot of health practitioners, PAs. I mean, that's something that you may want to be interested in checking out.
Sure.
So I've gone to those conferences and got connected with, you know, like-minded people all over the country. And just getting connected with like-minded people, to me, is very inspiring and motivating. Because focusing on nutrition as a physician, especially when physicians historically have not necessarily focused on nutrition as much, it can, some people look at you like you're crazy, to be honest with you. And seeing other people doing the same things, it really just says, like, you know, I'm not crazy. This nutrition stuff is important. I remember when I was a resident and I was telling some of my mentors that I didn't want to do basic science research as much, and I wanted to, you know, do a fellowship in nutrition. And I was thinking about going to culinary school. They literally said I was crazy and I was going to throw away my career, and I wasn't, you know, going to be effective as a physician. And that was the response. And, you know, I could have ran with it and said, well, you're right, let me just go back to the lab. And, you know, and people, now there's definitely a role for people in the lab, so I don't want to downplay any of the basic science researchers, because we need that. But just like we need people doing research, we also need people talking about nutrition and actually implementing the stuff that we are actually researching. So, you know, you mentioned you being Italian. What is the most popular diet right now when it comes to improving health outcomes? Mediterranean diet.
The Mediterranean diet, yep.
It's, people are researching. Researchers are researching the Mediterranean diet actively, and coming up with all these benefits. So,
and if you like wine, that's why the Mediterranean diet is nice.
Oh, great. I mean, there's a number of reasons why the Mediterranean diet is nice. But now we just have to figure out how to get people to adopt the Mediterranean diet.
Sure.
And that's where people like me come in. And, you know, I also have a research background, so I've worked with some of the food scientists. I actually just published a chapter in the textbook for food scientists on how to study food.
Mm.
I wrote the background information for it. So I work with those food scientists. But, you know, ultimately, if the science is, just stays in the lab, it doesn't help anybody. So we have to get the science outside of the lab to the actual people. And the Mediterranean diet, you know, it's funny. We talk about it like it's something new. And it's nothing new.
Yep.
Like, Italian grandmothers have known this for centuries.
Yep, absolutely.
And all of a sudden, in the past 20 years, it's just like, oh, we need to cook.
Yes, for anybody listening on the call, I promise pasta and pizza is not the, you know, foundational staple in an Italian diet.
Yes.
I promise you this. It is not. That is the tip of the iceberg. It's the icing on the cake. And and we enjoy eating it on Sundays. But the rest of the time, it's exactly what the Mediterranean diet describes.
But also, you know, another interesting fact about the Mediterranean diet, and it really is a testament to the the influence of our Western American diet.
Mm-hmm.
So what country has, like, amongst the highest rates of childhood obesity in the world? And it's not in the United States. The country is actually Greece, on the Mediterranean.
Interesting.
Interesting. And
yeah,
why,
very interesting.
Why is that? A lot of people in Greece and a lot of other countries are abandoning the traditional way of eating and, you know, switching over to the more of the Western diet. If you go to, you know, you go to Dubai or some of these foreign countries in the Middle East, it's just like Dubai in particular, it's like KFC, Wendy's, and McDonald's, and,
very,
you know.
Very much Americanized, yep.
It's very much Americanized.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, you know, when people grew up on this, you know, Middle Eastern diet, which is, you know, not too far removed from the Mediterranean diet, it's like everyone's abandoning that stuff, and they're going down the route of fast food and, you know, the stuff that's delicious. Don't get me wrong. It's delicious, but it is – doing it frequently is just not healthy. In the United States, we've proven that. But that is the way the whole world is shifting towards that. We're shifting away from the stuff that we know to be healthy, and we're going – you know, towards the fast food, convenient, you know, if anything, stuff that promotes food addiction. And that's a problem.
Because I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to pretend like as if I've never eaten fast food in my life. I don't think you could be American and really not touch fast food.
Right.
But I would offer to you that I've gotten smarter throughout the years, of course, and when I eat a fast food meal, I actually am pretty hungry within about 30 minutes of finishing it.
Yeah.
You know, I don't feel like I've gotten satisfied from a fast food meal. I feel like I'm, like, ready to consume some more, and I think it's because of all that wonderful ultra-processed food that you were talking about earlier, you know, that's chock full of, like, super sugars and things that make me just want to crave more food. I can eat salads now, you know, and I can eat berries and nuts and fruits and things like that, and I tell you what, I have felt more full and satisfied eating a simple salad for a longer period of time than I would if I was to go in and, say, buy, like, you know, I guess a Big Mac or whatever. I just I feel so much hungrier after I eat that type of food.
Yeah.
Rather than actually being satisfied.
And that's really because the salad has a lot of fiber in it. And fiber, it actually swells when it combines with water. It swells, and so it kind of increases in size and takes up more space in your stomach, which can make you feel more full. And the hunger
hormones and stuff like that get more satisfied because, well, I remember seeing a study that it showed that, and correct me if I'm wrong, please, but, you know, that fast food, it can become synthesized so quickly in the human body that it actually doesn't make it down to the terminal ileum, and where the terminal ileum releases the I'm not hungry anymore, I'm satisfied hormone back to the brain to say, hey, you know what, I'm actually good still. I don't need more calories. I'm fine.
Yeah.
You know, so I just the value of fiber alone is incredible, you know. It's very valuable because it actually will make its way through the entire system. And on top of that, we all know that the benefits of fiber are it's shown clinically to reduce your cholesterol. It's shown to just improve your bowel movements, which is super important. Like, if you're not going to the bathroom every single day, that might necessarily be normal for you. But if you increase fiber, we're going to increase the ability for the stuff that's already kind of in there to make its way out. You know, there's a lot of, like, there's a lot of stuff that can sit around and cause a bunch of inflammation in your gut. And, we can have a whole nother podcast about gut health, but
we definitely have a podcast about gut health. So the take home point, people need fiber, and fiber should come from food. So I'm not talking about, you know, these fiber supplements. Get your fiber from real food that has fiber. And you also brought up a good point in terms of not necessarily having to have bowel movement every day. That is true. So average American, according to a large population study that tried to identify, like, what is normal frequency for bowel movements, well, there's a range. And that range, it's basically either 3 bowel movements per day down to 3 bowel movements per week.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are having more than 3 bowel movements per day, that's probably not normal. That's outside of the normal range. That does not necessarily mean you have a problem. It just means you're outside of normal range. So that can mean anything. And if you're, you know, having less than 3 bowel movements per week, you know, that just means you're outside of that normal range.
Sure.
So that's it.
And it's not to say that you're abnormal. Yeah, it's just to say that you should be healthy. Like, you shouldn't be, like, one thing I do know about is, like, stool it having, right? So, like, if you're, like, if you're habit stooling where you have to, like, physically use your abdomen to try to get this stool into the toilet, that's going to lead to a multitude of problems.
You know, that's a marker of constipation at the end of the day. And that, there's plenty of things we can do for constipation.
Absolutely.
Including changing your diet.
Well, I wanted to round out, this has been such a great call, I wanted to round it out with just a concept that, you know, maybe I'm going to pull in my, you know, my agricultural education degree, if I may, for just a little bit, and the fact that we have a farm in the western side of North Carolina where we love to grow our own food. But,
and I love that, by the way. Like, I'm very much so jealous, and I wish I can learn how to become a farmer.
Just like you told me that if you want to have me up in Chicago and you show me all the sites and everything like that, it stays the same for Western North Carolina. We love having you here in Asheville, and you're very welcome to come on down and come visit the farm, and we'll show you what we do too. I also have a YouTube channel. I'm just going to do a shameless plug here, but I have a YouTube channel that you can go check out, not for just yourself, Dr. McDonald, but for our listeners. You know, you guys can check out, like, all the things that we do on the farm with the animals, and we talk chickens, we talk goats, all that kind of stuff. But I say all that because it's a segue into this understanding of local regional food. And we don't need to have this concept of I can't get myself fresh food. I mean, please, let me know by your experience, is there a way that a person in Chicago, so like we're thinking major urban area here, can they still, in fact, put their hand on a farmer's market? Is that possible?
Oh, definitely. So there are plenty of farmer's markets throughout the city. And even in these neighborhoods that are so-called food deserts. So I think of the 61st Street Farmer Market. That's the first thing that comes to mind. And the people who run the 61st Street Farmers Market here in Chicago, which is a neighborhood on the south side, they actually sponsored all the legislation to get food stamps covered at farmers markets.
Yep.
So for people who do have food insecurity, who do depend on SNAP funding and food stamps, the food stamps are available at you can use them at farmers markets. And not only that, there's a program that matches, it's like a matching program. So whatever money people spend on food stamps, there's a separate funding program that's going to match the funds. So people can actually get more food when they come in with food stamps than otherwise. So that's one option. And, you know, looking for the farmers markets, there is a new bill that's really encouraging a lot of convenience stores to have healthy fresh fruit. So there's definitely ways to get good fruits and vegetables in urban areas. And thankfully, urban farming and urban agriculture is really starting to take off.
Yep, absolutely.
On multiple different levels. So just on a community level, there are plenty of community farms. I live on the south side, and I have, you know, my little garden in my backyard, and it's not even a garden. I have an earth box, a bunch of earth boxes, because my backyard is actually concrete. So I have these little, I have maybe about eight or so earth boxes, and I have all my herbs and, you know, broccoli and tomatoes and all that stuff in the backyard, you know, that I use. And the inspiration for the earth boxes really came from the chef Rick Bayless. So Rick Bayless, Chicago chef, famous for Mexican food. And on the rooftop of his restaurant, he has, you know, hundreds of earth boxes. And the vegetables that he serves in the restaurant comes from the vegetables on the rooftop of the restaurant.
Yep.
And I'm like, oh, man, if he can do that for a top-class, world-class restaurant, I can do that for my family. Like, I'm just trying to feed, you know, four other people, not a whole restaurant worth of people.
Yep.
So that's what I did. And there's also community gardens. So a couple blocks from me, there's a community garden where everybody in the neighborhood plants stuff, and we've identified, you know, people in our kind of block club to take care of it in certain days. And that speaks to community, you know what I mean? That's like, these are the things that we should be doing. So in terms of not only are we growing healthy food, but the garden is really a way to grow a healthy community.
Sure.
You're interacting with your neighbors, and I mean, if anything, it's taken us back to, you know, a time in the past where neighbors actually hung out and communicated. So now,
because we lived in an agrarian society, absolutely
right. So, like,
yeah,
you know,
I mean, the foundation of America is agriculture. I mean, we, you know, when you think about, I mean, just forefathers' time, you know, just to speak about how our society has evolved over the years, is that we started off with people, yes, they were bankers, they were lawyers, they were all those other types of things. But the fact of the matter was, is that every one of them, to include George Washington himself, actually had Mount Vernon that he loved to retire to. The concept of this new coined term called agrotherapy, guys, it's been around forever. I mean, we know that putting your hands in soil is something that will root you and connect you to something bigger than you. And, you know, use the internet for what it's worth, but use it for, like, you know, creating these societies. Reach out to your local areas, look for these things on Facebook, and, like, really get into it. And you don't have to be a farmer to start. I mean, there's farmers of all levels here. There's people who are doing it of all levels. If your thing is that you don't want to grow, you know, celery or something like that, maybe you're a fantastic farmer of flowers, and, you know, there's something about flowers, you know, so there's get out in your communities and strive to do this. If there's nothing going on around you, start it, you know, like get out there, mess up, because I'm going to tell you right now, like, yes, I'm a farmer, but the fact of the matter is that I still won't consider myself a good farmer, but I definitely would think that I have worked myself through messing up plenty of times to where I'm okay now. You know,
yeah.
So I had no farming experience. I wasn't born and raised in, you know, an agricultural society, if you will. I was born in the city, you know, I was raised in the city, and I made that choice to say, I got to get out, get literally back to my roots. And so that's unfortunately what's been going on in America over the course of all of these years, is that people have migrated toward urban areas. And
yeah.
So we really have lost our connection with food. Ever since World War II, we have never seen an influx toward urban areas as much as we are now. And so when I throw out the term local regional food guys, I'm talking about like getting out, finding out who these people are, supporting your local farmers markets, because you have a choice and you can put your food dollars back into your communities, and that will help generate additional opportunities for these farmers or these growers to give you the food that you want. You don't have to buy the food that has been given to you out of like a grocery store. You know,
yeah.
Don't get me wrong, there's fine food there, but then I can uncover this whole thing about like, you know, yes, it's labeled organic, so it must be good for me, but the fact of the matter is this organic food may not even be grown in the United States. It might be
right.
grown in a farm that's thousands of miles away. And so yeah. when you bring up Rick Bayless, I love that, because to me, I don't even have to know that the food is being grown on a rooftop or in somebody's backyard or at those, you know, at the restaurant. It
yeah.
just tastes fresher to me.
Yeah.
Like I can definitely experience a different taste, you know, flavor profile, because at the end of the day, not only do we want the food to be nutritious, it's got to taste good, you know? So
yeah.
like we, people, if it doesn't taste good, we're not eating it, you know?
Yeah.
So I would be happy yeah. to eat one of your omelets at McDonald's, though, I'll tell you that.
You know? they were pretty good, actually. Other things that you can do, so a lot of places, I mean, figure out who your local farms are. And the best way to do that is really just go to your local farmer's market.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go to the local farmer's market, like, I talk to the farmers. And a lot of farmers, they have CSA boxes where,
absolutely.
You know, you sign up for their CSA program, mm-hmm. and, you know, once a week you get a delivery of just, you know, a bunch of different fresh fruits and vegetables, whatever they
yep.
have. And it's the stuff that they pick it and send it to you. And it's not like it's sitting on a truck somewhere or, you know, sitting in a warehouse somewhere or being irradiated like a lot of food is nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
It's a whole separate conversation. It's going straight from the farm. And,
yep.
you know, you get an idea of what food is supposed to look like. So not like every vegetable or fruit is this perfect, you know, specimen that ends up in the supermarket. And that's okay. Like, it doesn't have to look pretty. It just has to be good for you and be healthy and taste good.
Sure.
So look and taste, you know, somewhat they're connected, but not always.
Yep.
We need to erase some of the, like, everything we've been taught to some degree. But the CSA boxes are definitely, you know, one way to go for many people.
And if I can add to that too, there's folks that are also doing meat CSAs as well. So if you need protein in your life, and you don't want to just have a plant-based diet, which, you know, you could sit there and we can, you know, talk about pros and cons of all of that anyway. But if you
definitely.
Like fresh meats as well, you make sure that they're grass-fed. Make sure that these animals aren't grain-finished. You know, it's going to just have a better, healthier nutritional profile for you if you follow those particular ways. But, you know, just like the CSA box for produce, they now, there's a lot of farmers getting pretty ingenious out there, and they can actually have CSA boxes for meats as well. So you can have poultry and pork and beef and, you know, other seasonal meats, if you will, can all be in the same box as well. And,
yeah.
And really what you're doing when you opt in for something like that, for community supported agricultural programs like this, is that you're once again giving more food dollars to those local farmers so they can continue to support you in your demands of what you want for your food. You have, like I said, you have a choice. You don't have to eat what's put in front of you. You can cause there to be better food to be put in front of you.
Yeah, definitely. I wholeheartedly agree with that. And then plus it's just good to support the farmers, especially the farmers who are outside of big agriculture.
Yep.
So, and that's a whole, the impact of big agriculture, is that's a whole separate conversation.
Oh, yeah, totally. Totally. So, well, I mean, I'm like speechless because I'm just so giddy about like just all of the hopefully great content that we delivered today. I mean, I'm so like thrilled and I'm so honored that you joined me on this call today. I just, Once again, I wanted to make sure that we let people know it's thedotskitchen.com, correct? Not .org.
.com.
Okay, yeah. So please make sure that you go check out Dr. McDonald on the Doc's Kitchen, and we will have a list of resources that you can also look at that we talked about on this podcast today. You know, Dr. Yum was brought up. That is Dr. Namali Fernando, who, guys, if you, like, one thing, if I could say it about what I love about her website, is that, number one, she's a nonprofit physician. So, like, she set out to say, you know, I want to see patients. This is going to be my livelihood. But now she's a pediatrician practicing in Virginia. And she does all of this, like, you know, essentially for free, you know. Like, she provides this really great resource. She's going to change the name of it, but there's this resource, and it's escaping my name. I think it's the machine, the food machine or something like that.
Yeah.
Guys, you can input what you want, or excuse me, what you have inside your house. And you can input these things, and it will spit a recipe back out at you. And so you could say, like, I have ginger, and I have an onion, and I have, you know, maybe some leftover chicken or what have you. And you can have a stir-fried dish recipe in minutes. So please, you know, check that out. I love that about the Dr. Yum site. And please make sure that you check out the Doc's Kitchen. You know, I would love to have you back as soon as possible, Dr. McDonald, if that's okay with you.
Oh, definitely. Thanks for having me in the first place.
Absolutely. Yes. And so at the very least, you're going to continue to deliver this content. We're going to bring on folks like Dr. McDonald, guys, and we are just going to really unwrap this understanding of unconventional wellness. And we want to make sure that you understand that, once again, there's hope. You don't have to be a number. Don't be a statistic. You can be different, and you can be unique, and you know what? You could be healthy. And so we want to make sure that you understand all these things. So from all of us over here at Unconventional Wellness Radio, thank you so much, Dr. McDonald, again, for your brilliance. And we look forward to always seeing you guys on that next podcast. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Oh, man, I sure do love bringing you this podcast. And while we're at it, if you like this podcast, please hit that subscribe button so you can always be getting notifications when we upload a new podcast. And always, as we love, go ahead and click on that review button, click on that like button, send this podcast to a friend, because we all could use every bit of education that we could in order to maximize the potential for our wellness. We will catch you guys on the next podcast. Thanks again.